Definitely a pleasure. I don't remember. I think Wadud as well was doing something similar, or someone else. And I like the idea a lot that when you posted your story up on what you call it on Messenger, I was just like, yeah, this is definitely something I want to do. I want to help these guys out. I think there's a lot to share, a lot to talk about. So I'm very excited. Thank you.
Most definitely, man. Just to kind of give you a brief background. So pretty much I got the idea by just thinking about what issues I kind of see today in our like communities. And one of the big issues is for low-income communities, there's a big issue where it's very rare to see people that look like us in, and just in the US, whether you're talking about engineering or, medicine. Healthcare, just most fields is very rare to, it's typically predominantly a white field in most fields in the
Absolutely.
US. So just wanted to use this as a give people an example of what to look at. In addition, also dive deep into how to actually become an engineer and things like that. So
Nice.
we've done a
Yeah.
couple of them. Had an interview with someone doing real estate, another interview with someone that is doing their PhD and trying to get like a wide spectrum of folks here. So that's kind of the breadth of what I'm trying to do. And yeah, thanks again for taking the time to do this.
I'm definitely appreciative of the time and effort that you put in. I'm definitely happy to provide assistance as best as I can. I mean, just to add to you, if you don't mind me
Of
saying,
course.
your objective is definitely on par with an objective that I had, which is I want to own a business. I want to become a CEO. In terms of like a grand scheme of things, I want to become a CEO of a company or my own company to give the Muslim community its presence in the commercial world, and the business, corporate level side of things. And to go off of what you were saying earlier about how, it's predominantly white, even if you take the industry as non-predominantly white, the images that you see on the news and any interviews or outlets for these industries, STEM industries specifically, usually are white people due to them dominating the corporate level
Retail.
spectrum. And so I definitely appreciate what you're doing. It's definitely on in line with what I would like the Muslim community and minorities in general to have the ability to see that no, these people do exist in this, despite the fact that the spotlight is not on them. They exist and they're working hard and they're making, their presence known. And so
100%.
definitely agree with what you're doing and definitely willing to support.
What do you actually, well, before we dive into what you want to do with your business, just quickly, can you give a quick background about who you are and just where you're from?
Well, first things first, my name is Rami Shoke. I was born in the United States, lived most of my life in two different countries, the United States and the United Arab Emirates. My parents are originally from Syria. My dad came to the United States and got his licensing for pediatrics emergency. And we became connected to the United States ever since. And yeah, so that's just basically a rundown of where I'm from and where I've been.
And before we dive into like the details real quick, one thing I kind of like to ask people about is their upbringings, because I think that's it really does shape people to kind of develop and like become who they are right now. So just out of curiosity, what was kind of your childhood like? Were there any experiences that you kind of think shaped you to be who you are now?
Definitely the upbringing is very, in my eyes, from the people that I've spoken to, it's very unique in a sense that it was a mixture of cultural aspects from my parents and then an embodiment of let's say Western culture. Most of the times over on the East side, it's generally people are raised around their people. Their likes. So culture doesn't shift outside or inside the house. So no matter what the parents raise their kids in, they're going to get raised similarly outside. So there's no need to like emphasize and stuff. But being raised in an environment where the outside is Western and the inside is more Eastern, I had the ability to take a breadth of knowledge from both sides. and my parents being you know, having experience living here prior to me and my younger siblings coming, allowed them to enrich us with love for our home origins, love for what do you call it? Love for the different races that exist and the different cultures that exist. The ability for me to have this high interest in engaging and diving into different cultures is something that I think can only be experienced when you have the upbringing that I had, which is, you know, having that mixture of different cultures coming in. And so I think that that is a very big component of my social capabilities nowadays, is that because I have background of two different cultures that on the grand scheme of things are very different in how they're of how they see social, economic, and governmental life, allows me to have more than one perspective when engaging with different people. And the ability to shift my perspective and understand creates a more empathetic side for me to be able to have a more engaging conversation where not only am I receiving information, I'm giving information, and then from that, me and the person that are conversing subsequently enrich each other with new knowledge and make ourselves even better. So the fact that my upbringing was multicultural at the same time focused on building us as people who have strong roots to their origins, and welcoming, you know, improving and life enhancing ideas, made me overall a more engaging person. So that's probably the most unique thing I would say in my upbringing that shaped me who I am today.
Yeah, that's beautiful. One thing I'm kind of curious about is today the world's really a diverse place, and like having that cross-cultural communication ability, that's something that's very undervalued nowadays, and it's a hard skill to come by. Out of curiosity, what were your first couple experiences like when you're like interacting with other cultures outside your own? Like you mentioned, you know, you walk outside the home and it's a very different environment. It's not the same place.
Yeah. I think two shifts happened for me that woke me up, I guess. The first one was when I left elementary school from the United States in grade 5, and I went to grade 6 in the Middle East over in Abu Dhabi. Despite the UAE being a country that is relatively developed and mimics a lot of Western infrastructure in terms of how their schools are set up and stuff like that, the people there are, you know, diverse, but mainly Middle Eastern. And so that shock of me going from the United States to the UAE and going to school and not being around Americans, you know, and was the biggest shock for me, because people started asking me, where are you from? That question is very different from West to East. Yeah. And I didn't realize that until I gave my answer, which was, I'm an American. Their responses were, no, you're not. Where are your parents from? So to them, lineage is very important. When you come to the West and you say, where are you from, to someone, generally speaking, the answer is going to be, I'm American. The lineage doesn't really matter, because the farther you go back in lineage, the more mixed it becomes. And I guess they don't really find importance in that. But in the Middle East, though, it's very important that you know where your lineage is from, because that's who shapes who you are. That shift made me question my identity to an extent. And I began to see how I've turned off portions of my identity while I was in the United States to mingle and engage and become, you know, one with the group that I was in, which is a predominantly white classroom.
Like code switching.
Exactly. And then that opened up, like, as they call it, the woke eye or the third eye, to a whole new viewpoint on life. It's not to say that what I had before I went to the Middle East was bad. No, it was really good. And it definitely enriched me as a person who can engage and, you know, talk. But then now that I have something else, I just grew a whole new culture. I'm basically multicultural now, which in my eyes is better than being a single culture. And because I have that, I was able to get, you know, put effort, you know, for my family to learn Arabic, to learn about my history, to engage with people from my culture, learn their norms, learn what they like, what they dislike, what's appropriate, what's not appropriate, and kind of intermix that with the Western upbringing that I had and formulate the most, I guess, super powerful version of me that I can have. This is not to say that I haven't stopped learning. No, I'm definitely continuously learning and evolving who I am, but being able to get those two different perspectives at such a young age allowed me to build the ability to communicate with very different people and know the boundaries when you're talking to these different people. You know, everyone's upbringing is different. Everyone's background is different. So you need to be able to know when to say things, how to say things. And I think a lot of people who are raised in singular cultural environments fail to receive that. I don't want to say empathetic, because people can be empathetic, but they don't have that understanding of perspective.
The perspective, yeah.
Perspective that's needed to understand where the person's coming from. And therefore, they can say something meaningful, yet it comes off as rude or disrespectful. So that's the first shift. The second shift is when I came back here to college. So one thing that I realized that was different about my upbringing when I was a child here is that there's a dynamic switch in how people lead their lives from when they're young in the West and then when they're in college. And so that cultural shift coming in and realizing that, you know, there are new laws in the United States, there's a different atmosphere socially, the activities people do are a lot different, and what people's interests are very different, and the competitiveness is definitely different. While in elementary school it was highly cooperative and you know, helping each other out, in college it turned into a more competitive scene where it's almost like every man for himself. And so it's not to say that there's no collaboration, but it's like you need to hold your own. You're not being handheld anymore. And so coming into an environment where you need to, you know, be diversified in your perspective, and you need to be able to hold your own in a discussion or in an environment where, in an educational environment. At the same time, you need to be able to be accepting of other people's opinions, hence the collaboration portion. Just that shift from East to West back allowed me to grow again and formulate a new and improved version of myself.
Yeah.
So like, you know, the first shift helped me gain perspective. The second shift helped me gain some form of individuality, the ability for me to think for myself and come up with ideas on my own and become a leader. And what prompted my desire to become a CEO or become in the corporate level in business is that leadership aspect, is the ability for you to engage with different people and hear their ideas and then hear yours and then collaboratively come together and bring about a proper and full resolution to any problem that you face.
Yeah, and that's a really unique experience to have, being able to have an upbringing in one place and having to readjust while still having that different upbringing, that having these multiple perspectives. One issue that a lot of immigrants, particularly parents, experience today is when they're raising kids in the US and they just moved at a young age, there's almost like a gap in regards to the cultural communication that
exactly.
There's just, like you said, in the house, whether you're Arab, whether you're, you know, Nigerian, South African, or Hispanic, you have that culture at home and your parents don't necessarily see the other side of the culture that you experience once you go to school, and it's almost a different divide. But what advice would you have for, like, necessarily someone who was, say, in your position but wasn't able to have that experience of moving back and coming back again?
So reading is definitely the most predominant advice that I can give anybody, because, you know, I lucked out that my dad came before we were born to the United States. So he already gained experience of what Western culture is like. So raising us, we never really shifted. It was never like a substantial change going from outside into the home. It was almost, you know, fluid It's just there were some values that weren't seen outside that were seen inside the home. But reading is what allowed me to grow more. My dad teaching us Arabic through books, reading history books in Arabic from Arab authors, and then gaining the knowledge from there allowed me to understand why people think the way they think and what perspective of history do they have and the positions that people hold during, you know, different, you know, when you have differing opinions. So reading is definitely something important. If you are, you know, let's say in the United States, your parents are immigrants and you were raised in the United States from a young age, I think reading about your parents' culture is more important than having them understand the new culture that you're engaging with, primarily because your parents are a staple of your life and they're the foundation that build you up until you leave home. And so it's better for you to be able to interact with the foundation than the foundation interact with you, because if you're not, you know, you're not capable of interacting with the foundation, you can crumble the foundation and everything falls. But if the foundation is strong, anything that's built on top of it, no matter how unstable, is going to become stable because the foundation is stable. And so learn about your culture, learn about why your parents think the way they think, understand, not just learn, understand their perspective. And that will ultimately allow you to not only see, you know, the culture at home differently and more positively, but you also begin to influence externally your actions, your approach, your thought process, which will inevitably make you a better person overall with anyone you engage with.
Yeah, it makes you definitely more intentional in the way you communicate.
Exactly, having that evidences.
Out of curiosity, what were your experiences like with school?
So I had three experiences: elementary, high school, middle school, and then college. In elementary, as I said, I was born and raised in the United States of America, my childhood time period. So I highly had a American persona per se. And I was, though my dad and mom put effort into teaching us Arabic, connecting us with our religion and our culture and stuff like that, it never really manifested in me as an identity. It more or less manifested as knowledge and as practice. Wasn't my identity. It was very hard being in elementary school around a dark time in the United States where people of my heritage were seen as negative or bad people. It was a hard wake-up call to see how I experienced racism without feeling it. I never felt like, looking back at elementary school now, I believe I was experiencing racism. But at the time, it never fazed me one bit, because my identity of having a different culture be a part of me was not there. So I always thought that I was just like every other kid. But now that I look back at the experiences and what was done to me and what was told to me and the way I was, you know, treated at some point, I never realized that I experienced racism firsthand and never batted an eye about it.
Yeah.
Then came going to the Middle East, as I told you. That's where I began to see that I was different, that I was not who I thought I was, that I had more to my identity than what I had originally perceived. And that's where I told you, where they would ask me, where are your parents from? And that's a kind of question that was hammered down into me relatively quickly in high school or middle school. When I interacted with people. And so having that experience woke me up to there's more to me than what I know. And that's what prompted me to, as I said, start learning about my culture and building my identity and have that knowledge of who I am and what I attribute to and what more does my persona have to offer than just what I grew up with. Then the last shift happened, or the last experience happened in college, when I came back and, you know, the United States had gone through a lot of shifts from 1995 to 2014 when I first entered college and I came back to the States. Primarily the time between 2003 to 2012, 13, there's a lot of shifts in social norms and economical norms and just how people led their lives. And so coming back to college, I had to, again, play catch up with society and understand what is normal, what is not, what is appropriate to say, what is not, etc. And so having that experience, again, reshaped my understanding of how people see things. And of course, it also was carried out also through all the way through college, through my different experiences on how to better myself in communication. And so those are the three main school experiences that I can say shaped my life.
Outside of school, how did you spend your time? What did you do outside of school?
So I'm very big into sports. I love playing team sports, primarily due to the collaborative effort that goes on there. Communication and collaboration are like two golden words in my book. I always desire to do anything that involves me working with someone else to achieve a goal of some sorts, whether it be playing a video
game. You use the word collaboration a lot. I'm just curious, where is that? What is it that makes that so important to you? Why do you value that so much?
Because I have noticed that people, a lot of experiences that I've had show people for themselves, always thinking about themselves. What makes me richer? What makes me better than everyone else? I unfortunately do not share that kind of mentality. I do say unfortunately, but fortunately for me, I think the way I think is definitely more productive. I do have greed and hunger for betterment, for self-improvement. This is not to say that, oh, no, I need other people to help me achieve my goals. No, that's not to say I do have my own personal goals, and I do have hunger to better myself and become better than others. Mm-hmm. But I don't want to become better than others at the expense of others. I don't want it to be where I become better than someone by them losing or by them not gaining experience or by them becoming poorer, weaker, you know, less knowledge or less successful. I want to become better than that person because I showed more initiative and together we got our place based on our initiatives, which is why collaboration is held in such high regards with my eyes. You can still see individual improvement, individual skill, but at the same time, you're having that experience of connecting with someone else, sharing ideas, bettering yourself by other people's criticisms, and being able to do, and just overall, as humans, we're social people. So doing things with other people is supposed to be a norm for us. And so just my outlook on the experiences that I've had with people being too individualistic in their mindset, and just my overall craving and love for social interaction makes collaboration a very, very important component in my book of success.
You mentioned when you were shifting back to college in the US that it was definitely a more competitive landscape, but out of curiosity, when it comes to like engineering in particular, how would you kind of describe how collaboration is valued maybe in college versus industry now that you've been in industry for a bit? How do they compare?
That's a very good question, and one that I love to answer because I didn't realize this. Well, okay, I realized it, or I thought I knew in college that yes, industry is different than college, but I didn't know how different until I experienced industry. Mm-hmm. College is set up in a way where unfortunately you have to compete against each other to succeed. GPAs are individual scores. And therefore, just because you collaborated on a project, it's very difficult to gauge individual performance. So if one person on your team does bad and the project flops, you flop as well. Yeah. There's no ability for you to be the collaborative person and be shown success because of your collaboration. No, the whole
metric is flawed in that sense.
Exactly. Education, our system is a little flawed in that sense that we are set up in an individualistic grading scheme, but not in an individualistic environment. Engineering is a highly collaborative environment. You need to be jumping ideas off of each other. One thing that surprised me a lot when I went from college to industry and that I had to wake up to is ask questions. If you're stuck, ask questions. In college, that wasn't the case, or at least not for the most part. If you were stuck, you usually got a mean look, or no one was interested in helping others out when they were lost. It was either you got the information on your own, or they gave you the bare minimum they want, and then you go figure out the rest on yourself. In industry, on the other hand, there's a high emphasis on if there's something you don't know, go seek it. Go seek that help. People are willing to give you the answer. And me waking up, and that's the thing that I had to wake up to, was that when I got into work, I was very cautious and shy of asking questions, not because I think asking questions is dumb, but because I was programmed from college to believe that if I ask questions, I'm going to be seen as a laughing stock of the classroom. As in, oh, this kid doesn't know what's going on, even though I'm pretty sure 3/4 of the classroom didn't know what was going on when I asked the question. I did them all a favor when I asked the question, or whoever asked the question did everyone else a favor by asking the question. You were shunned in college to ask questions. In industry, you're encouraged, and you are not penalized as in like physically penalized, but you are penalized if you don't ask questions, because you're penalizing yourself from knowledge at that point. So that's
one thing I always think about, like in classes. You always know there's times when a student or damn near the whole class has this exact same question or doesn't know something. And it reflects on the exam when like the average score is maybe a 50%. There's things we don't know. So why are we asking questions about them?
Exactly.
Do you think that general fear the fear of judgment or misconception, where do you think that stems from? Because when it comes to education, it's supposed to be a learning environment. You're not supposed to come in knowing the answers.
That's a tough question, because being judgmental, I think, is inherent in us human beings, because we believe we have a sense of self-righteousness and a sense of understanding of the world. And to an extent, no matter how diverse you are in your background and stuff, you have a sense that you know more than everyone else, that your opinions are right and others are wrong, regardless of where you're from. And because of that, you have an easier time judging people than judging yourself. And when you're in class and that one kid asks, it's easier for you to judge them that they don't know than to admit yourself that you don't know.
Yeah.
Because in college, you individual, I don't want to say pride, but like feeling that you're better than someone else is almost a persona requirement in order to succeed in college. And it's not helped when phrases like "that's a stupid question" get thrown out very easily.
Yeah.
And things like when you ask someone, when you ask the teacher to explain something and they start explaining in grave detail, even like the most basic of portions, and everyone just like sighs in agony or something because you're talking about something they already know. Like I'm for one, a person who likes being babied when it comes to explaining. When you explain something to me, I want you to break it down into as basic terms as possible and build on that. Because again, as I told you with the foundation example, if my foundation is not strong, no matter how much I get the main concept, I'm not going to be able to implement it. It's going to crumble because the foundation has something wrong with it. So it's because judgment is an inherent thing with us, and we as people have a hard time getting over it.
Yeah.
We feel that high of, you know, haha, I didn't ask the question, so I'm smarter than this person, even though you may be dumber than that person and not know more than what they don't know.
That's very true.
They asked the question and you didn't, you feel a sense of pride and happiness. And so when that happens and you like that feeling, we tend to stick to feelings that make us feel good. And when you stick to that feeling, it seeps through continuously and you start to build.
Someone break that cycle right there. So we speak about, and sometimes we sometimes don't even know when that cycle is happening. And exactly. At some point partake in that. And yeah, like you said, I think that you explained it really well when you said it's much easier to judge someone else rather than admit that you yourself are in that exact same boat.
Exactly.
Someone work on something like that. How can you, it's kind of a personal growth thing, but where does that journey kind of start?
So while you're right, it's a personal growth. In my eyes, I don't see it as something you need to do by yourself ever. Hence why collaboration is very important to me. People need to understand that we need to communicate with each other. We need to say those stupid things. Like, I'll give you an example, a personal example for me. We were having a meeting for a project that I was on. And I asked a question of, can you experience gravity in a pressure vessel? If you were to pressurize a vessel and create vacuum, will you flow or will you experience gravity? That question may seem stupid for someone who knows the answer. And people did laugh and give weird looks around the meeting when I asked that question. But it's required that these questions be asked because someone in the room might not know. Or if I was the only one that didn't know, I just learned something and now I'm on the same level as them. Mm-hmm. And if they had understood that hey, we're helping this person reach our level of understanding, then that means now instead of having, let's say, 8 leads and then a 9th that's half a lead due to malknowledge, now we're 9 leads with full knowledge. So now you've just improved and enhanced the team's capabilities of answering questions, understanding. The example is a little, in my eyes, maybe a little weak, but it's to show that.
No, I get what you're saying. It enriches the overall group. I guess maybe a better way for me to reframe that question might be, that's a really good example right there. But you also mentioned when you got into industry, you didn't know it was like that. You had been programmed in a different way and you had this, not a wall, but like almost a mental wall of, yep. Okay, it's actually encouraged and I should be doing this because it's beneficial to the overall group. Exactly. But how did you get over that initial hurdle, I guess is what I'm trying to say. Like
So going from the college mentality to the industry mentality?
Yeah.
Okay, it's definitely, it's hard.
And do you think a college student can do that while they're in college?
That's what I was initially trying to answer was, yes, you should be doing it in college and no question should go unasked. Mm-hmm. Be the one laughed at in class. Be the one that's given weird looks. Be the one that's laughed at. Just ask the question, because the moment you are willing to take the hit for asking a question, you've already jumped the main hurdle that you have to jump, and that's gaining knowledge. People are laughing at you and not asking questions, you're being laughed at and you're gaining knowledge. Your balance that you're weighing things on is much better. You're weighing yourself against people by what knowledge you have rather than how you look. And what's more important in industry, the knowledge that you have or your appearance to others? Pretty sure it's the knowledge that you have. And that's the first hurdle that everyone needs to get over in college. And it's not just an individual thing. I think college-wide, it should be something that's encouraged. And it should be, you know, whatever methods professors decide, it could be anonymous questioning apps or, you know, a message board that you can anonymously ask and stuff like that. But professors and colleges need to implement methodologies for people to ask questions more frequently and more openly and more often, because if they don't have that environment already established for them, then they're never going to work on it. And so while it is an individual effort to go and ask those questions, it's also the effort on the collective to provide the environment for that asking that question, which is why I'm saying that anyone who sees this, or anyone who will take away something from this, I want every student inside one classroom to begin being that chain reaction of people asking questions.
That's very true.
Yeah, and that's what's needed. If it's just one person putting the effort, that flame's gonna die out so quickly, because the majority is gonna clobber it over and basically choke it out of oxygen. But if everyone begins a flame, it becomes to a point where the flame's just engulfed everything and everyone's asking questions and just knowledge is being distributed everywhere.
Yeah, it's a complete change in culture.
Exactly. So it is, of course, as you said, individualistic, means everyone needs to start taking that step. And so that's essentially the goal, is that as an individual, you begin taking that step.
Yeah. Although you can't ignite the initial fire itself, you can light a spark and do your part for sure.
Exactly. And that brings me to where I was saying how the college as a collective needs to create an environment. Industry creates that environment. They give you a mentor. They give you subject matter experts. They give you those tools and make them readily available for you. They don't, you know, you're not losing face in any shape or form when you go and ask questions. So they've provided you an environment where questions is a necessity, and therefore you can get over that wall once you hit industry.
What made you initially want to pursue engineering and go to college?
Ooh, I told the story at my first job. We were tasked with giving presentations about something unique about us. The first thing I said when I got up in front of the group, know this, everyone in that group is an engineer. The manager was an engineer, and everyone in there is an engineer, and they all love their jobs, love engineering. The first thing that I said when I got up to the front was, I did not want to be an engineer. Engineering was actually never a goal of mine. The complexity and just the amount of effort that you had to put into, for me, just wasn't something that I wanted. Instead, I wanted to fly aircraft. I wanted to fly planes, because I had a very strong love for airplanes as a kid. Primarily just, they look cool, and when you're in the sky, you're free. So that was the extent of my goal. When it came to applying for college, especially, and I don't know if this is appropriate, but in a post 9/11 environment.
You don't need to filter what you're saying, by the way. Is that
okay? I just want to make sure that in a post 9/11 environment, being of Arabian descent, despite the fact that there's no ties between me and anything Middle Eastern, other than, you know, bloodline, having that bloodline alone makes it difficult for people to be okay with you becoming a pilot and stuff. And so this wasn't my thought, but this was the collective thought around me from family, friends, and all that stuff, who kind of pressured me mentally to say, okay, I'll apply to these different flight schools where I can learn how to fly an airplane, but I do need a safe zone. And engineering was the best way for me to stay connected to aviation at the same time, not have to deal with that big hurdle should it come. So, and I forgot to mention job security. The aviation industry, or industry in general, is moving to highly autonomous operations. I mean, even now aircrafts have autopilot, despite the fact that their pilots still exist. And there's an autopilot for most of the journey of the aircraft's flight. The autopilot is managing all the systems and the plane's trajectory.
When was the first time you heard of engineering?
College.
Really?
Like, I knew engineering was a thing, but when I heard of engineering was when I came to college. I didn't realize that how complex, how different the environment is. Everyone that I met in my aerospace college courses love engineering to such a high point that they know parameters, details of the vehicles that they want to work on. People were saying thrust values for certain rockets, dimensions, rocket types. Like, granted, these are all, you know, surface knowledge based on a product line, but still, they had such devotion to this industry or to this aspect of the industry that they went ahead and did the research, which is something that I didn't do. My research was on types of airplanes. How many engines do they have, et cetera, like that. I never went into the more deeper details of the insides and stuff. So when I started interacting with these people and realized how much of a knowledge gap there was and how much of a enthusiasm gap there was, I came into engineering because it was available. They came into engineering because they wanted to live it. And so that difference was a big shock my freshman year. The competitive aspect, I was far behind the line, way behind the line. And so while, yes, I've heard engineering before, that was when I actually learned of engineering.
So how did you go from that initial start point to where you are today? Like, how did you get from that point to now being a full-time engineer where you are now?
A wake-up call. My freshman year ended with a 1.98 cumulative GPA. And we all know that in freshman year, it's highly, you know, mathematical physics and all those courses, which means I did very bad in core basic engineering concepts. Yeah. That wake-up call is what I was needed to sit down and look, where am I devoting my time? Where are my goals? Do I want to end up, you know, switching majors like almost 75% of my incoming freshman class did? Or do I want to, you know, leave college altogether? Like a lot of other people choose to do that. But of course, the culture that my family has, or the culture that my family comes from, education is placed at a very, very high status. And so all I had to do was get that wake-up call and sit down and put a plan together. And the first thing that I wanted to do was get into a project. Getting into a project, in my eyes, is the best way anyone can become interested in anything, because that's where you actually experience the implementation of what you're learning. The actual job that you'll be doing is through these projects. And so that was my first goal, and that was to get into an M2I project, a Make to Innovate project. Originally, I wanted to get into rocketry. But then a friend of mine was on a different team, and that team was called SciSci. That was the first project I ever actually became a part of in college. And this friend would talk to me about what they do and stuff, and I became really interested. And so I wanted to join that project. Of course, the semester after my freshman year, I wasn't allowed because I didn't meet the GPA requirement. So that gave me another thing I needed to work on, and that is my GPA and my education. So now I have a goal in mind. I want to get into that project. What do I need to do to get to that project? Get good grades. So that built in me the desire to put down and study, reallocate my time from entertaining myself with people to making friends with people in my major, in the vicinity of my industry, people who ate, you know, breathed and talked engineering.
Yeah.
And so doing that helped me get the GPA up, which then put me into the project. And then that is when I fell in love with engineering. And then the year after is when I fell in love with leadership.
How'd you get introduced to the concept of leadership, and what was your initial ideology or view of leadership for? Oh, so currently right now I'm in the Vermeer International Leadership Program, and I started in August. And I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the study of leadership and the practice of leadership. And that's why I was just very curious to ask you that exact question.
So I always thought leadership was a position of power. A position where you dictated what happens and it gets done, essentially. And it's not wrong that that misconception is made, because there are a lot of leaders who act that way. where they say something and it needs to get done. And when it's not done, there's punishment. So while that misconception is a misconception of the concept of leadership, it's not, I don't fault anyone for having that concept, because that's how it's portrayed by a majority of the more well-known. Now, can you give me 1 second?
Oh yeah, no, that's not a problem. We can pause the recording real quick. No, you're good. Here, we resume the recording. So just right where we left off.
All right, sweet. So I don't fault anyone for having that misconception. And that was my concept of leadership at the time. It's not that I didn't have an interest in leadership. I really wanted to become a leader, but I always thought that to become a leader, you had to be better. You had to have the knowledge. You had to know more than everybody else on the team to be able to become a leader.
Or quote unquote, the juice.
Yes, exactly. And that's where I was wrong, because the way I got my leadership in SciSat, for the most part, was because engineering-wise, I would have been useless on any other subsystem. So I came into SciSat on the mission planning team, where I did more documentation work and you know, making sure everything's organized. I then switched over to the payload team, where I was working on radios and radars. A concept very foreign to me, and being, you know, the sophomore that I am, had no knowledge of and no prior interest in, so I actually was green to the concept. When the next project lead was going to be picked, I threw my name in the hat. I told the project lead at that time, said, hey, I'm really interested in becoming project lead, and I really want to become project lead. I didn't expect that I would become project lead. I announced it with the hopes that they would pave the path for me to become project lead. As in, you know, I do well in payload, and I did. I would put effort, like I asked the payload lead to give me some books about, you know, radios and how they work, so I can, you know, build that knowledge. Next thing you know, halfway through the semester, and this is my second semester on SciSat, they tell me you've been selected as project lead. Now, while they didn't say it, I personally believe it's because I would have not been useful on any other team as an engineer. And so it's better to throw someone who is still ripe with space in their brain to fill with knowledge than to get someone who's already experienced in an aspect of the satellite and shift them away from that and put someone like me in that technical aspect. So that's my first misconception cut away, is that I need to know everything. You don't need to know everything. You just have to have the passion and desire to become a leader. And people will make that path for you available. The second misconception that was deleted from my brain was the dictatorship aspect. The project lead that I shadowed for that semester to prepare me for when they graduate, I take over, was highly engaged with the team. Never ever did he just order things. Actually, I don't think he ever gave an order. What he did, on the other hand, was hold a discussion. Went around the room, each team give your updates, and would ask questions. Never ever gave a statement, just questions. Let the team leads figure it out. Let the team leads discuss it. He would provide, you know, things that wouldn't be, you know, as they described it for me, my job as the project lead is to make sure that the blinds that every subsystem has are wide open to the other subsystems. Because the moment you're focused on a specific aspect of a product, you become so engaged in that that you sometimes forget that other teams are depending on your design as well. Because people sometimes forget about integration being a portion in engineering. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to integrate, if you're thinking only about your side, it's not gonna work well with the others and you're gonna have problems. And so the way he described it to me was that you're responsible for making sure everyone's aware of the other teams and where they're at. And so with that misconception blown away, I began to see the key word that I've always held dear to my heart. That's collaboration. There's a lot of talking, a lot of meetings, a lot of collaborating, a lot of learning. And so that's what hooked me on leadership. And then the last thing was the fun. Being a leader is more than just managing a team and making sure your team is intact and getting its work done. It's about having fun a lot. you go around to the different subsystems during the workday and just talk with the team members. They're doing the work that's gonna yield your team's success. Learn from them, show them that you're interested in what they're doing. I'm not saying go become the expert at what they're doing, but you have fun, you talk with people, you learn about, you make friends that way. And so that made me just become hungry to become a leader. And then after watching a documentary, I wanted to become a CEO.
What documentary was that? And why did this documentary make you want to become a CEO in particular?
So in college, the way leadership works is different than industry. You're not faced with as many deadly decisions as you do in industry, because in college, you're working on usually products that are not going to be carrying human beings or dealing with human beings. You're more or less building a contraption that you test and say, hey, our way of thinking of how to tackle this problem, we found a solution. In industry, on the other hand, leads deal with large human-related projects that can lead to loss of life, damage to infrastructure, etc. The documentary that I watched that snapped in my brain that I wanted to become a CEO was the crash of Challenger from, I forgot whether it was Mayday or Air Crash Investigations, one of those two documentary channels. And the thing that stood out to me was how the decision was made to go for launch that day, where a pool of engineers all came into an agreement that no, we should not launch. Weather's not permitting us. We're not in a situation where we should be launching. Yet management was able to convince them, except for one, to go for launch. And we lost, I believe, 5 or 6 astronauts that day. Just being able to see the difference between factual evidence from engineering side and monetary business evidence from the management side clash and not agree and force one to overtake the other and have consequences is something that blew me away.
Yeah.
I never realized that, you know, engineering and management can have differences, and when one wins, the other suffers. Because had they gone for a launch that day had they not gone for a launch that day, their program could have taken a monetary blow and the shuttle program could have been scrapped overall, and therefore the ISS would not be built, etc. So I was very interested in the train of thought that these two teams had to go through. It's a game of risk, and that risk gives me, for a lack of better terms, a high.
Yeah.
I really like the thrill of the risk and then the collaboration that comes along with it. The fact that I have to, so that prompted me to want to become a CEO, because at that point you have access to talk with everyone. You talk with the marketing team, the engineering team, the planning team, the launch team. You talk with every team. And I have a very big love for the bigger picture. And just being able to understand why management came to that decision, why management was able to convince the engineers to go for launch that day, just showed me a gap of knowledge that I had that I wanted to fill. And so that put me with the idea that I wanted to become that.
So another thing too is with that goal, which is an ambitious goal, and it's one of those things, yeah. There's so many different trains of thoughts. There's so many things that can go wrong, and your daily job is necessarily being a fighter, and it's just risk management.
Exactly.
When it comes to that, how would you go about dealing with stress? So just out of curiosity right now, on the road to success, there's always adversity and there's always stress. You have to deal with some sort of stress. Absolutely. But we're so far in this journey, what have been some of your most stressful moments, and have you been able to recover, or how do you necessarily approach dealing with that type of stress?
So honestly, believe it or not, the companies actually are a big component in alleviating the stress that hits the individual. And I'll talk about myself specifically. For example, when I love software engineering. I love software. I love writing software. And this stems primarily from my love for video games. And, you know, seeing code make things move and things happen just made me fall in love with it. So 3D modeling, on the other hand, CAD and stuff, never my forte. I never liked design. And so when my first job was a design position, and I got hit with a lot of modeling that I needed to do, I became stressed, not because it was difficult per se, but because I felt like I had such a large gap of knowledge that I wasn't going to be as efficient as senior engineers. And if I'm not as efficient as senior engineers, I'm going to be seen as a disposable, you know, entity, and I would lose my job because of my inability to catch along. So when I said that the company plays a role in alleviating that stress is what my company had. They had a course for teaching that and how to use their program. But at the same time, it's the collaborative effort, the encouraged collaborative effort and asking questions that the environment had. You know, a lot of senior engineers and other engineers took the time to come to my desk and show me not only nifty tricks on how to, you know, do something quicker, but they showed me, you know, the methodology of design. Why do we decide to do this instead of this? What's a better option here? And so I started to gain knowledge and be able to apply everything and see a result. I design stuff, and I was able to design things that are now going to be on board aircraft. So sometime this year, an aircraft is going to roll out of the hangar, and it's going to have a part that my name is on the drawing for. And just seeing that progress of, I had no knowledge, I asked, company provided capability to have an answer, implement answer, see result, see that result is going to be implemented in something that actually impacts customers positively, satisfaction. No stress.
It's a big shift in mindset for sure.
Exactly. But yes, I think the biggest thing that helps me alleviate stress is the prevalence of people willing to help answer questions and guide a newcomer through their adjustment to their new environment.
Would you say that's been the most stressful part in your journey, is just that necessary transition?
No.
So in just regards to just like your overall development, not just engineering, but just holistically as a person, I was curious to ask you, what have you been some of your most stressful moments? And in those moments, how'd you go about dealing with your stress?
Okay.
And if you're comfortable sharing that, if not, then we can transition.
See, again, I I'm having a roadblock, but I'm trying to understand the question as best as I can, because I want to answer it fully, because there have been a lot of stressful moments in my time at work, but I don't know if that counts as an answer to the question. Sorry, can you just explain the question one last time?
No, it's not necessarily what counts or doesn't count, but in regards to just the most stressful moments in your life, whether it's at work or outside of work, in those moments, how do you go about, like, approach, how was your initial approach to dealing with stress in that initial moment?
Okay, I can give you a perfect example. The new company that I got hired into just recently, I was working with a team. And they were going through a formal qualification test, I believe is what it was called. And this is essentially testing all the software that we have developed to make sure that it runs exactly as expected. So we did, you know, unofficial testing, got results from that. Now this is the official test, and the results here need to match that result to prove to our customers that, hey, in an official scene, this works. I'm still new. And I had no prior knowledge in software development, software testing, et cetera. This is entirely new territory to me. And so the biggest stress that I had was being given a task and not getting it done in a timely manner, specifically when you're working on a government project and your time is audited and budget is not in abundance. It's like every penny counts. And so if you spend too long of a time on a project, that gives a hit to the company saying, hey, you promised us this, you gave us this. And it traces all the way back to who? The person who took a long time. And that becomes a black dot on your thing. And a piece of advice that was given to me by one of my professors was, it is easier for people to recall the negative things about you than the positive things about you. And so that stress of having to excel at everything ate me alive. My manager was the best person to alleviate that stress for me because he let me share my stresses, assured me of a lot of things that I was, I guess, overthinking. And he, you know, gave me methods of how to get through any problems that I was having. So, you know, asking the questions and, you know, different practices, taking notes, reading here and stuff like that. You know, a lot of what he suggested were things that I was already implementing, but having a leader tell you these things gives you a sense of a boost of confidence saying, hey, what he's telling me to do, I'm already doing, which means I'm doing the right thing without needing direction. So I feel good about myself. I'm going down the right track. If I have to get used to this stuff, it's fine. I can handle a little bit of difficulty. I'll just ask the questions and get the ball rolling. And that's essentially how I became comfortable with what I was being asked to do, is that immediately, especially this thing. We have someone called a Scrum Master, and our Scrum Master, she was phenomenal at giving this advice. She said, do not forget to have your SME talk when you begin a task. SME in my company stands for subject matter expert. That little piece of advice, 15 minutes, not relatively big time, her giving me that advice and me implementing it, I saw a very big shift in my confidence in getting the task done and my overall efficiency in getting it done. Because you're talking to someone who's an expert at what's going on, they give you the necessary information, you apply it, and you're good to go. And so that's one of, I think, the stressful thing. And unfortunately, it's something that happens to me every single time I go from position to position. So it's not a stressful thing that can get cured by one antidote. It's something that I need to go through every single time, but that's communicating is my antidote for that stress.
Yeah, and it's something that you have to adapt to in a lot of new positions. Exactly.
Definitely.
Out of curiosity, how do you define success for yourself?
Ooh. So success for me, I read this as well. People love to associate success with perfection.
Yeah.
I also made that, I think synonymization would be the right word. Or like,
I'm not sure what that means.
I don't even know if that's a word actually, sorry. I equated success and perfection together.
Yeah.
But success to me became, and this is from me reading and understanding, success for for me is to meet the commitment that I have put on myself. If I took on this task, so long as I finish this task, I have attained success. You don't need to go above and beyond. You don't need to completely redo everything. You're given a task, you're entrusted with something. Success should be your ability to take on something from its roots or from its beginning to its end and present a valid result. What the problems along the way, the difficulties, the roadblocks, all of that's part of the process. And you'll have dips, you'll fail, you'll succeed and stuff like that. But success as a term is if I'm able to take something from the beginning to the end and deliver on it.
So one of your main goal right now is to become CEO, and I want to ask you what roadblocks do you see on that journey and obstacles? What do you think you'll have to overcome to get to that point?
So I need to understand the company culture. I need to know how people interact, what terminology is used, what do people, you know, what is the company holding itself to, the standard that it holds itself to. By understanding that, I can improve my communication with my peers better, with my leaders better, with my tasks better. The product that I end up making, if I can have it relate to what the company stands for in terms of its values, its, you know, the different codes of conduct or codes of practice that they have, my product can then show that it's actually part of the company. And so being able to communicate better with my peers, being able to show it through my work will give me recognition that this person understands what the main objective here. They see the bigger picture and can go to a lower level and implement that bigger picture. So that's company culture. The other thing is leadership. Just because I had multiple leadership positions in college means nothing when it comes to the grand scheme of things. There's a lot more to risk management than just being able to communicate with a bunch of people and come to a resolution together. There's a lot of important information that you need to understand and have as background knowledge to pull in whenever you need to. Another one is decisive thinking, being very decisive. When you start having discussions with people, becoming indecisive is very easy because you have so many ideas coming in and so many of them feel like the right one. But then you hit the roadblock of which one is the right one? Which one do I want to risk taking? So you begin to prolong the decision-making process for no reason because you become indecisive. So being able to enrich myself with best practices, learn from the failures that I have right now, my decisiveness will improve. Mm-hmm. And of course, lastly is recognition. I think the biggest roadblock for me is going to be recognition. Being able for people to see that the work that I'm doing is actually substantial and is an improvement to the company, not just keeping the company plateaued at its current state, is making the company better. And then showing the higher ups that I'm making a big impact, and them knowing who I am. And that, of course, comes from communication, you know, being good at what you do. And again, that definition of success, where right now I'm not at a level where I need to worry about whether I'm going to be CEO or not. I'm at a level where I'm an engineer. I'm given a test. I take that test, read the test procedure, execute the test, provide results, analyze results, done. That's my current success criteria. Is I finish the task at hand. That building block will help me get over any other roadblocks that come along the way.
So, I think the recognition part is one of the biggest things. Before you can actually make progress, you need to understand where you actually are at.
Exactly.
Curiosity. So knowing what you know now, if you could go back in time and give yourself advice when, you know, you were just starting college, what advice would you give yourself?
I would definitely give myself the advice of read more. Definitely read more. and to an extent, find something that you hate and read about it. I'm not saying this because I want people to investigate, you know, what is the deepest, darkest hatred that I have, and then go hate it even more by reading about it. No. When you read about something that you don't like, you begin to understand it. And when you understand it, it goes from being just hatred or not liking the subject to being something that you just don't want. You know, if you don't like CAD modeling, for example, yeah, if you don't read about it, you're never going to know what it is for. I mean, it exists in industry for a reason.
Yeah.
So for example, for me, I hated complexity in mathematics, physics, and stuff. So what I would give myself was, is I should have done more of that. I should have dove into my math classes a lot more. You know, not just did what was required to pass the class at 100%, but go even further. You know, understand, why are we using these equations? Are there shortcuts? Are there ways to improve the process, etc.?
Yeah.
If I had done that, I probably would have led myself to engineering early on. From engineering, I would have realized that airplanes are beautiful and magnificent contraptions because of the engineering behind them. And through engineering, I would have led to the different types of engineering. And from there, I would have probably figured out what software engineering is. I mean, I said I love games. It's not just something you hate, something you love as well. If I loved games, if I truly loved video games, I should have gone and done research about them. How are they developed? What is used, etc. That would have led me to a lot of, to have better knowledge of the passion that I have right now. And I told you, I love software engineering. I want to be part of a company that works in software. One of my goals is to, you know, be able to work on guidance, navigation, and controls for autonomous vehicles.
Yeah.
And
it's a certain amount of self-awareness too.
Exactly. And so this passion
was, you don't like and why you don't like it, and then actually dive deeper into it.
Exactly. So I've developed my passion for this a little late into the game. But if I had been a little more committed to go deeper into what I love and I don't like when I was a kid, I probably would have gotten a stronger passion from then and been able to.
Is it really that late though? You're still very young.
That's the thing. It's never too late. I say late because there's a lot that was missed beforehand. Like, for example, in college, I only had one internship experience. While a lot of my friends had their job right now, they already had it locked in from day one of college. They got their internship in freshman year, built a record with the company, and graduated into a higher level position than what they started with. So
someone can argue, though, necessarily having to adapt to these new situations is actually might be better than necessarily coming in with that television, because for them there might have been experiences that could have been just as beneficial as the ones you're talking about right now that they never had due to the fact that they came in locked in with this one goal in mind.
Exactly. And this is where you're right, where it's never too late. I only said it's late for myself because I feel like I've missed a lot, but it's never too late because everyone is going through experience. Experience is not something you plan for. It's something that happens to you and you learn from it to shape your future. And so I would advise myself in the past, but I do believe that what happened to me in the past and the way I led my life made me who I am today. Something that I keep saying is, I appreciate the failure I had in college my freshman year. Had I not gotten the 1.98 GPA, let's say had I gotten a 4.0 my freshman year, I probably would have had less enthusiasm, less willingness to challenge myself. And I probably would have plateaued very early on in my hunger for education or knowledge. But because I had that failure, I had that hunger to improve myself, to become better. And that hunger manifested into a personality trait. So now I don't rest for just what I have. I want to keep going higher. But it's because of that failure.
That's beautiful. Another thing too, speaking of adversity and just hard times, right now going through COVID-19 and, you know, it's impacted a lot of people in their lives. I want to ask you how it's been impacting you and your own family.
So, I do not appreciate that this is a disease, but I do appreciate the fact that I am home and I'm around family, and I'm now cherishing how beneficial engaging with your family is. Yeah. Because while, you know, you can collaborate at work, you can collaborate at school, but people that you'll always be collaborating on almost a daily basis is your family. And that's, in my eyes, the best source of training you can give yourself for social skills, communication, because no matter what you do in your family, I don't think you'll ever reach a point where you'll say something that hurts someone in your family to the point where they'll disconnect from you. In life, if I say something, for example, to a peer of mine at work that they don't like, they can easily just never talk to me again. If you say something to a friend, they just drop you out of their lives, etc. But being with family, they'll take the hits and they'll show you where you hit them. And that will let you point out your own flaws and help you become better. So being stuck with family at this time is allowing me to expose a lot of flaws that I have in myself, my communication skills, and my perspective, and giving me the chance to fix it and improve myself so that when I do engage with people on a different front, I avoid making mistakes. I do have to say that on the other hand, the fact I'm not in constant communication with like team members, friends, etc., you know, having to work remotely from home, not fun. I'm not gonna lie, a lot of the work that I did in my previous company, I was just like, this is a lot of work I could do at home. I could do it at the comfort of my home. I could be in PJs and stuff like that. While I do enjoy working from home, it is fun being able to sit down at your desk wearing your PJs doing work. It's good every once in a while, but becoming an actual thing, it causes me to not want to be at home anymore. I want to be back in an engaging environment. I want to be at those meetings. I want to be, you know, constantly talking to the engineers around me and the managers around me and the, you know, the different people.
I think I always underestimated how productive or how hard it is to be productive from home. I always thought, wow, remote jobs, like anyone that was like a software engineer working remotely, I'm like, oh my God, that's dope. Easiest roles. That's so dope. You know, you could be just chilling at home, like exactly, just chilling at home with your PJs.
Yeah.
It's a completely different side. And it's one of those things that where you kind of think the grass is always greener.
It has to be balanced out, definitely. You can't have one or the other. You need to be able to balance it out.
What are you kind of doing to help yourself find that balance?
So for me is, as I told you, I have a passion for software development. And as I said, even, you know, I want to become part of leadership. So I'm more or less wanting to take the route of, you know, systems engineering, you know, bigger picture aspects. But I personally, for me, I want to know the product that I'm going to be working on. As a systems engineer, if I know how the software works or how the software is developed, I can understand the product more. So I can find mistakes, or I can help the software team fix problems much easier. I can develop better testing for our products. I also mentioned that I love video games. So pair those two together, software development, video games, boom, I'm making a video game.
That's awesome.
I'm working with a buddy of mine. Game. Huh?
What are you doing for your video game? Like, what's the plan for that?
So I have zero experience working in object-oriented programming, and that's essentially the bread and butter of video game development. So I have a friend that I play with. He's someone that I've met online through a video game, not someone I know in person. But he graduated with video game development as a degree, and he's like he works as a full-time job in that industry, and he was interested in developing a video game. And so we're developing, have you ever played a game called Asteroids?
Yeah, it was a very old game, yeah.
Basically, it's a very old game where you have a ship that's at a specific position and it moves from left to right and fires bullets at enemies that are moving left to right. That's basically, and they're shooting back at you. That's the game that we developed. That's it. It's
how much time did that take you?
So we've been at it for about, I'd say, two to three months we've been at it. And it's more or less at the beginning for the first third of this portion, I was just getting up to speed on source control, programming, etc. And the next portion was me asking a lot of questions and having my friend help me more or less do the code. They do the code for me and I just follow along. And then this last third has been me actually doing proper development. I still ask for help, but I'm actually doing the effort myself.
It's really dope.
And it's actually helping me translate to work. The great thing is I'm understanding a lot of the work flow because I'm working in a software developing environment where I'm going to be working with a lot of source control software, etc. I'm able to take terminology
translating.
Yeah, it's easily translating. So that's one aspect, is that I'm developing a video game. I'm building on that passion to do something that I can be proud of. And then from after we do that and I get more into it, we're going to actually develop a game that's more robust. And then we're going to try and develop a game that's actually going to sell. So that's there's really a plan cool. in place.
Oh, we're looking forward to it, man.
Yeah.
You know, if you need beta testers.
Absolutely. No, I'm that's actually what I want, is I want to be able to develop something and then show my friends what I've developed. And I hear all the criticism that you're going to say is like, man, you suck at this. No, it's definitely something I'm very excited about. Another thing that I've been doing was, this is also along the lines of software development, but something that you had mentioned at the beginning was you want to connect with the community. You want to do something for your community. Mm-hmm. And I want to do that too. One goal I had was I wanted to develop a hospital that implemented a lot of Islamic principles to it to give Muslim patients more comfort. Like, you know, female patients see female doctors. They don't have to deal with that cultural or religious barrier. And if you make a hospital that's more accessible to people, you can create, you know, more jobs. You hire more females into the medicine industry. Therefore, you start increasing the count of female. You're helping, you know, movements achieve goals by doing these things. And so I want to help my community. And since I have a passion for software development, a friend of mine who was a good friend of mine from high school, he's working on developing an app called Tertil, which helps Muslims around the world improve their recitation of the Quran. And it provides more, it's going to provide more functionalities, but that's the main point of, hence the name Tertil. It's to help Muslims recite the Quran accurately, correctly, and develop those beautiful voices that we see from a lot of reputable imams and reciters. And so I'm working with him and his team on the marketing front and API development front, which gives me experience in software development. And also gives me startup experience since he's working on a startup company. So I'm doing these things to give myself as much experience as possible and keep myself busy with this shift. But that does not mean that I'm just working my life away. I also have time. I play video games. I watch TV with my brothers and stuff. I still play sports. I'm, you know, trying to get back into volleyball and stuff. So this has been what I've been doing during COVID. And I think this is what people should be looking to do, is that's find awesome. Their passion and build upon it, because you have this free time. And that's something that I
want to reach out to further connect with you. What would be the best way to kind of reach out to you?
I would say email and LinkedIn. If you want
to drop your information in the video description for this, so they'll have access to your LinkedIn on there.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll send you that information over, and then you can hop that over there. Yeah, and honestly, I take pride in sharing my story. You know, I didn't mention this because I kept repeating this GPA score of 1.98. I took it from a 1.98 to a 3.45 cumulative.
That's
so,
amazing.
Oh, sorry, a 3.35. My bad. I'm giving myself too much credit here. I was able to make that shift, and this is a success story that I take pride in. And so I would love it if people use the contact information that I provided to reach out to me, to connect with me, to ask me questions. I want to give my experience to people. I want to hear from people what problems they're facing. Because if someone faces a problem that I haven't faced and we solve it together, hey, I can hopefully avoid that problem in the future. And yeah. So I want to create that environment of asking questions and communicating and stuff. So definitely big, bold letters, give him my contact info.
Most definitely. And right before we wrap up, if you were in my position, is there any questions you have asked yourself today that I didn't ask you?
You've nailed on a lot of important ones. I think you're doing a fantastic job. There's always going to be questions that can be asked. I unfortunately can't come up with anything off the top of my head because you've nailed a lot of these good questions. But there's definitely more to be asked. But what you're doing is a great step in getting people to share what they have, and exposing the true nature of and difficulty of, you know, real life. And people seeing this can, you know, help their children build a stronger future for them. And so I appreciate everything that you've done, the questions that you've asked, and everything that you dove into. If there's anything that pops up that you want to ask me personally, I'd be more than happy to do this again. And as I said before, if anyone wants to talk to me and learn more about what I've gone through and go into more detail, feel free to hit me up. I'm more than happy to have a chat.
Thank you so much, man, for your time. I really appreciate it. It means a lot.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Have a good one.